This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A small but mighty plant is making a comeback in our region that is important for habitat and to control soil erosion.
We saw that this needed to come back since it exists in so small of an area of its native range and it does so many amazing things.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. A new study starting at Marshall University is looking into the development of more effective addiction treatments. Eric Douglas has the story.
In 2022, fentanyl overdose was the leading cause of death for U.S. adults aged 18 to 45. That's according to Families Against Fentanyl. Some people are more susceptible to fentanyl addiction than others. Marshall University has received a $3.3 million grant from the National Institute on Drug Abuse to study how genes influence the brain's response to fentanyl. Understanding that mechanism can help with the development of treatment. Price Dixon, assistant professor of biomedical sciences at Marshall's Joan C. Edwards School of Medicine, is the lead investigator of this five-year study. An R1 research grant is a prestigious funding mechanism through the National Institutes of Health that supports health-related research projects. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas in Charleston.
Close to 1,000 educators are gathering in Morgantown this week. Chris Schultz has more.
The West Virginia Department of Education is holding the second Invest Symposium of the year. The week-long event brings together educators from across the state's northern region as they prepare for the upcoming school year. Invest workshops focus on engagement and effective instructional practices for English language arts, mathematics, and more. Educators will engage with exercises to strengthen their skills and knowledge base. Additionally, teachers will make valuable connections with their peers from across the state and share their experiences and expertise. The Department of Education will share updates on various initiatives, state code, and West Virginia Board of Education policies. Morgantown is the second of two Invest conferences held this summer, with the first offered in Charleston in June. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
The Appalachian region will see an influx of AmeriCorps workers from a White House group that focuses on coal and power plant communities. The program will send 150 workers to energy communities nationwide to participate in economic development, workforce planning, and environmental remediation projects. Targeted regions include Appalachian, Ohio, Eastern Kentucky, West Virginia, Virginia, the Illinois Coal Basin, the Four Corners, Wyoming, and Montana. The workers will be paid at least $15.51 an hour. They'll be among 9,000 Climate Corps members across the country, modeled on President Franklin D. Roosevelt's Civilian Conservation Corps of the New Deal. President Joe Biden's goal is 20,000 members in the Climate Corps. Interested candidates can apply now. Positions begin in October. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to block new U.S. Environmental Protection Agency power plant rules. Last week, the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia declined to block the rules at the urging of Morrissey and two dozen other state attorneys general. The rules would require existing coal plants and new gas plants to eliminate most of their carbon dioxide emissions. They could use carbon capture and storage, switch to hydrogen, or shut down. West Virginia's coal plants have been upgraded at the expense of electricity customers to ensure they operate well into the coming decade. The EPA's rules should stand, could force them to shut down much sooner. Morrissey could have a friendlier audience at the High Court. In 2022, it sided with West Virginia on EPA's previous attempt to regulate CO2 from power plants called the Clean Power Plan. Kamala Harris has been gaining support amongst national and statewide leaders in the Democratic Party. Brianna Heaney talked to Democratic state legislators about their support for Harris.
Delegate Mike Pushkin, the chairman of the state Democratic Party, says the party has been revitalized since Biden stepped down and Harris took the lead for the Democratic nomination for U.S. president.
I think that, President Biden is a true leader, and he showed it by stepping away from power. Now, in doing so, he endorsed his vice president, Kamala Harris. And when we elected him president, we elected her vice president. And that's because she's incredibly competent and capable and able to step up and fulfill the role of the president. And that's why she has my support 100%.
Harris brought in the largest one-day donation in the 2024 election cycle so far, something Pushkin says shows how galvanized the party and the public are behind her. Delegate Larry Rowe from Kanawha County says he thinks Harris is the best choice moving forward for Democrats.
I think she'd be a strong candidate. I'm pleased that she would be on the ticket. I hope she would pick a solid vice president who would round out the ticket.
He says he is hoping that if she wins the nomination, she will pick someone outside of Washington, D.C., like a state governor or Joe Manchin. Both Pushkin and Rowe signaled they would like to see a vice president from Appalachia or Appalachia adjacent. Rowe said it would be good to have someone who understands the needs of the people in this region and bring some economic opportunities to the region as well. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney in Charleston.
As summer comes to a close and back to school shopping begins, the Department of Health is reminding parents of the importance of immunization. Emily Rice has more.
West Virginia law requires children entering school to get certain immunizations, also called vaccines or shots. All children entering school in West Virginia, grades K through 12, must show proof of immunization against diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, polio, measles, mumps, rubella, varicella, and hepatitis B, unless a medical exemption is approved by the Department of Health. West Virginia is one of five states in the U.S. that does not allow religious or philosophical exemptions for vaccine requirements. Additional proof of immunization is required for children entering grades 7 and 12 for diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, and meningococcal disease unless a medical exemption is approved by the Department of Health. Health Secretary Sherry Young said immunizations are crucial in preventing severe and potentially fatal illnesses, noting that measles in particular poses serious health risks to children. West Virginia saw its first case of measles since 2009 in April when an, quote, under-vaccinated Monongalia County resident traveled internationally and upon returning home was treated and later diagnosed at an outpatient clinic. State health leaders learned that 128 West Virginia residents from 30 counties and 24 out-of-state contacts from four neighboring states were potentially exposed to measles. The Department of Health announced on May 10th that the measles case had been officially contained and credited West Virginia's strict immunization policies for the state's herd immunity to the disease. The state health department recently set up a way for West Virginia residents to access their vaccination records at MyIR Mobile for free. Patients or guardians can review their immunization history and print their official records from the site or app. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Emily Rice in Charleston.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:52. Mostly cloudy skies today. Scattered rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s and 80s. Chance of rain and thunderstorms tonight with lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness, chance of rain and thunderstorms, highs in the 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by West Virginia University Magazine, showcasing stories of mountaineer purpose and discovery across the globe. Online at magazine.wvu.edu. There are more than 1,400 varieties of bamboo. Some are tiny, scrub-like plants, while others grow to around 30 feet tall. The most common variety in the U.S. is the golden or fishpole bamboo from China. But there is a species native to Appalachia. It was nearly wiped out, but volunteers in southwestern Virginia are trying to restore the plant. Radio IQ's Roxy Todd has more.
It's hard to imagine someone more enthusiastic for a plant than Laura Young is about river cane.
We are looking at baby river cane plants. Little scraggly things, but they have a lot of charisma.
Young works with the Department of Conservation and Recreation. We're standing beside her truck, and in the bed are four little plants growing in sandwich bags. They're humble little things, little more than stalks of grass. They look a little like bamboo plants.
River cane is really amazing for stabilizing stream banks.
Young says this plant helps prevent erosion and can withstand floods. It can also prevent the spread of invasive plants. As babies, river cane are a few inches tall, but eventually they could grow to 30 feet. River cane is grown commercially, but the plants are difficult to find and fairly expensive. In 2021, Young and 10 volunteers started growing river cane in sandwich bags using roots from an existing strand in Lee County. They nursed the plants on their porches. After the plants were big enough, they transplanted them along the Powell River.
We saw that this needed to come back since it exists in so small of an area of its native range and it does so many amazing things.
River cane used to grow along just about every river and stream bed in the eastern and central United States. Many indigenous people used river cane to make baskets and weapons, and they helped maintain the plant. But with more development along riverbanks, river cane began to disappear.
You know, the river's really beautiful. We like to look at it, so we clear off the vegetation so you can see it.
Cows also like to eat it, which is another reason it faded from the landscape.
Apparently, it's really delicious. So cows have come through and really just mowed that down.
There's even a traditional fiddle song called Cattle in the Cane. Young says this plant plays an important role for several animal species.
It's great for habitat for migratory songbirds, and then there's also a lot of rare moths that we track that this is a specific host plant for. So this is the only thing that those moths can eat. If this plant is not there, the moths are not there.
The first year Young and her small army of volunteers grew river cane, the results were better than she'd hoped for. And it doesn't take a lot of technical expertise to grow these plants.
Like, this is something that a sixth grade class could do.
Young began recruiting more volunteers and scaled up, planting more river cane. Local colleges and universities also pitched in to help grow the young plants until they're ready to be transplanted.
It was absolutely amazing, and I feel like the community's really excited about this because it's so important and you can see it working.
Young says the strand they started in 2021 is thriving.
It's beautiful and it's doing really, really well, and it doesn't need our help anymore.
This year, they started 1,000 river cane plants and added new sites along the Clinch River in St. Paul. The plants are just off a walking trail, so people can see them easily. Young says she hopes they can eventually expand into other watersheds across southwest Virginia to help river cane return to the landscape. In St. Paul, I'm Roxy Todd.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Eric Douglas produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.